Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
11 o'clock hour, Cody and Gold live outside Kauffman Stadium. Specifically, come by and say hello outside Gate D. We'll be hanging out here till 2 o'clock, and Vern will be on from 2 to 2.30 with his on-deck show. He'll also be on with us at 12.30. We've got the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, joining us at around 11.45 or so. We'll get his perspective on this 2024 roster that he put together. We'll also have Ryan Lefever, the voice of the Royals, in the 1 o'clock hour. And you never know who's going to stop by. We got Dusty Likens now, who decided to brave the wind for a few minutes and join us for a little bit here this segment. On the show, of course, host of After Hours, and now just whenever, just hop on whenever.
Yeah, it's
you're a free man.
We've kind of, in so many ways, Cody, you have no idea. We're getting ready to start the spring and summer season too, and being a free man is really nice. But yeah, we're kind of playing it up. This is the last full week, so this is season two of After Hours coming to a complete on Friday night.
And then it's summer vacation. And you're like a kid, and you're like a kid for school.
And then I'm just the guy that shows up randomly like, oh, it's Wednesday night and the Royals had a random day game, and it goes from like Mr. Professional and Vern to After Hours.
So Gold decided to sit down due to the fact that over on Twitch and Twitter and YouTube, they were saying, welcome back to Alex Gold Penis Cam.
It was just
the camera was right on my crotch.
Direct. Yeah. Could not have been more direct.
Hog and tap here at Kauffman Stadium. Way to keep it professional. Boys. I come here for 5 seconds and we've already turned it into After Hours. I guess I'm just toxic. We have to admit that.
We only have two cameras, so we don't have a third camera
on
settle down.
In the show.
Goodness.
All right, coming up next is Josh Fringer, your Royals insider for the on-deck show.
Jeez. We had one listener drop off some corks.
And they're
Cody,
not even open.
And they're not opened, and Cody must have, during the break, taking a couple shots.
Or those weren't Scentsy waxes that you got.
One of our listeners brought over some quirks and some candles, but I'll be honest, the way they're packaged on one side,
it looks like
these would be gigantic edibles. I mean, these would be what, like 100 milligrams a piece?
You would make first pitch.
Instead of 10 milligrams, it'd be like 100 a piece. It'd be pretty wild stuff. Now, we'll get to some of our favorite season-long Royals bets. I want to go through that. I think we all kind of have some bets we placed, not just for today, but how we're viewing the season and everything. Before we get there, as we are sitting at the Truman Sports Complex and what could be a different look here in about 4 or 5 years, to say the least. Yeah, no doubt. Yesterday, the lease agreements were sent out, and much like with every other agreement that the teams have sent out, very quickly after, Frank White, the Jackson County executive, says, well, these aren't real agreements, these aren't binding and all that, and I'm not even telling you what's true or what's not. Now it's gotten to the point where it's gotten real into the semantics of, like, technically this is actually how it goes, but this side can skew the one word and it means it's not. So I'm not even going to get into the details on what's binding and what's not. I think what has been interesting for me in the last 24 hours, Cody, has been still the whole Oak Street thing, right, where we know now they're going to have Oak Street opened.
Yeah.
And that was something that a lot of people were concerned about, and the Royals said, all right, we agree to keep Oak Street open, and people are upset about that change happening now because it's happening inside of a week of the election.
Which but, I thought that they wanted change.
I thought people wanted to listen to feedback and have the teams, in this case the Royals, make changes based off of that. But I guess that doesn't always fit the narratives for some folks involved in the entire process. What he did say, John Sherman, yesterday, I thought was kind of interesting about the ballpark district. He said it's not going to have as much entertainment as the initial plan. Because you guys remember, this ballpark district, you know, yes, it's going to have the hotels, the bars, and things like that, but there was going to be maybe some entertainment options
for sure
around there. And because of the location and now maybe the Oak Street being open, is the footprint going to be a little smaller, a little tighter, I guess, to where they're still contributing, you know, this billion-dollar ballpark district, 1.3 potentially, district, but it's going to be a little different than maybe initial plan, which is what I thought the challenge of switching to the Crossroads site compared to the East Village site was always going to be. Anyway.
But again, as you and I, as we all know, I mean, it was more the city pushing them to the site they're in now than their dislike for East Village. Now, we can talk about why and how it came to that, and, you know, we have on this show, but look, a little less entertainment's okay just based on that location. I'm just hoping it expands. I'm hoping it is the connecting piece between the parts of the Crossroads we like, not the part now. We don't like the part now. There's like 10 businesses maybe worth going to, and the rest is just like an empty U-Haul and a couple of other
options. I was saying the Crossroads. I mean, I love the Crossroads, the part they're in.
The part that they're taking over, that's not the best part of the Crossroads.
Agreed.
You've got to go a little further.
I agree with that.
To get to the good part of the Crossroads. I'm hoping it's a bridge between those two. It connects both Power and Light and the Crossroads part that is busy, and you marry those two together. That's why it needs less entertainment, I guess, in my mind. Not none, just less.
Yeah, I think when I was at the Monarch, I think is a place that it's way out of my pay rate, but it was a guy's birthday, had a reservation, went, kind of saw the area from that spot of, like, what they were kind of envisioning. And like Cody said, it is kind of like the outstretched part of the Crossroads.
Yeah,
like,
it's the edge.
That's not normally where people are always going to, you know, that's not the prime real estate of the Crossroads. But, man, I'll be honest with you guys, like, I can't keep up with it. Like, every single – and you guys get the same email that I'm getting, and I'm sure people can find those releases anywhere they want, but it just seems like every day as we get closer, there's all these little, like, nooks and crooks that change or are being added or somebody speaking.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think we could all, like, honestly say that we didn't think it would be this much of a mess. Like, I thought it was going to – and, again, I welcome to my new world of politics and sports in the city that you work in, but, like – I thought it was maybe a little bit going to be easier than it has been, or the process wasn't going to be as confusing. And there's so many different parts of it. And there's people that I know that are voting no. There's people that I know that are voting yes. And there's people that have perfect opinions for both. I personally will tell you, I'm voting yes. I want a downtown stadium. I want to see this city continue to grow. And I understand that there's people that have nostalgia and there's people that don't want to, you know, extended tax. But look, man, like, just come up with a plan that you're going to sell and keep, and then we'll get to the whole, you know, because, like, this is what, we're April 2nd, the day.
Yeah, Tuesday. Tuesday is election day. And I think we've all acknowledged on whether it's the Royals, the Chiefs, Jackson County, it goes without saying, the rollout all the way around has been a mess. I mean,
it's been messy.
The order of events and when this election is happening and when they originally want everything to happen, it has not all gone to plan. I don't think anybody will argue with that. The one thing I will say about, like, hey, things changing, and like the financial aspects have to be set in stone before election day, and they are set in stone before election day from what they're asking for the county. The actual design of the stadium and what might shift, spoiler, that is going to continue
That's
to
movable.
Change. Like, I mean, I'm obviously going way further than reality here, but like, I'm convinced at this point, if they said in a rendering that there's going to be a hot dog stand in right field, but they moved it 5 inches, people are going to bitch. Like, that's kind of where I feel like we're at with this too.
Right. Is there a Quick Trip in here, by the way?
Well, there's the Quick Trip party porch,
but I don't know.
Because I'm getting off center. That's why I'm here early. Because I mean, I'm here early because I'm trying to soak it in. You know, this is only going to be here for another couple years, right?
This might be one of four remaining.
Yeah, and I'm dead serious. I'm, like, dead-ass serious.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a place I grew up coming to.
Hell
you
yeah.
guys as well. You've been here since
I love Kauffman.
Yay high. But I am interested. I want to see what's new out here this year.
Yeah, it is the as Cody said, the QT fountain deck.
We're calling it the Coke party porch on this show, but that's fine.
I don't know if you want to go with that. Like,
you don't think we should stick with that?
This isn't the 80s.
Yeah.
It was the Pepsi party porch, but obviously now there's
Coke.
Coke
party porch.
Yeah. It's Coca-Cola's in the stadium
now. We're
running
into Charlie Sheen up there. Yeah.
He's been to the stadium before.
Yes,
All-Star game, 2013. Yeah. Charlie
what?
Sheen.
He was here for that?
I believe he was, if I remember right.
Is he still gone?
But he's the guy that created Two and a Half Men, or director
Chuck Lorre?
That I believe that he got in. Remember, they had a huge fight and, you know, trash.
Yeah.
They've made up, I guess, and there's some new show they're working on together.
Wow.
I don't know the name.
He's
of
back,
it.
Man.
Okay, and John Shire's like completely bald.
Is he?
Yeah, he has like his own sitcom now. Doesn't even look like the same guy.
I haven't. Yeah, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he pulled the Vern.
He went Vern.
He went
cue ball.
He went
just all in.
Yeah, he's all in.
Okay.
But I do want to bring this up because you were talking about it earlier. Get back on the topic of the stadium. When you say lowering the entertainment or like,
I think
it's
he
very
said
vague. Like, what is the inter? Like, I believe, no Top Golf area, or is it no like?
No, I think what he said in the full press conference setting yesterday was he thinks some of the organic or the entertainment will develop organically, like like to Cody's point, other aspects of the Crossroads, and local businesses. Maybe they're
we'll
gonna
flow.
That'll bring itself almost to the area. Now, the price tag, I will push back. Someone on the text line said, he's changing the entertainment district. He's putting in less money. That's just inaccurate. They are putting in $1 billion. In fact, it went to $1.3 billion at a town hall they had a week or so ago, plus the cost overrun. So, no, they're not now saying, oh, we're going to put in less for the entertainment district. That's inaccurate. That is the financial commitment they have been steadfast on.
It might
throughout.
Just be more housing. It might be a various amount of different things.
Seems like there's
also I did
a lot
see
of
the
entertainment down there already. You know?
Oh, I saw it too.
Yeah, we love a lot of this.
The mayor had mentioned, because there was some concern with Oak Street now being open, like, and John Sherman said, you know, after the election, there will be more discussions about what some of the businesses on Oak Street, what happens to some of those businesses, and or I should say east of Oak Street.
Sure.
And the mayor had said yesterday on his social media accounts that the city will not allow, basically, you know, hey, you're not going to be able to just displace the local business for another local business directly. Does that make sense?
Like, I can't kick them out because it's not part of my plan to be like, I want this now too, and putting my own business.
And some people, was there anything legally binding? The mayor in his tweet said that that's something that basically the city, the mayor, and then city council can actually control. That's not something that actually has
yeah,
to
Yeah, that's a completely
done.
Different thing, and I don't think that they were ever doing that. Sometimes it's a bit of fear-mongering on the idea of, like, they're going to take away everything, and you're like, that's not true. We all love the Crossroads. I like being out there too, Dustin. We've talked a lot about that. I worked out there for a really long time, but still.
Temptations.
Crossroads got a lot. Like, is it? Am I the only person who thinks that Crossroads got a lot better after Power and Light?
Yes. So,
like, I mean, am I the?
I think the
it started to grow a lot.
I think the Crossroads kind
time.
Of like with our demographic kind of became a because like
yeah,
I
it
think,
did
like our
because Power and Light was too young for us, like, so we took next to it.
Our parents went to Westport. Even though some will say they didn't, they went to Westport. There's an old country bar there called Guitars and Cadillacs. That's where my parents met.
They've reopened.
And they've reopened. Yeah.
Out at Oakland Park.
A lot of people went down there and went to Westport. Then Westport kind of got a little bit of a bad rap in the 90s. All of a sudden, you know, where do you go? Plaza, you know what? And then Power and Light gets built right when I turned 21. So we were there. It was cool. Then I got outdated from Power and Light real fast. And then Grinders, that sort of area became like the new spot. And that's where concerts went that weren't over-the-top big concerts. And, yeah, that area is – I'm actually going to that area to see a band here in May, I believe. So, I mean, it'll be – it's a good area. I love that place.
We got Dusty Likens hanging out with us. Again, later on this hour, in about 30 minutes, we're supposed to have the general manager of the Royals, J.J. Piccolo, join us as we're broadcasting outside of Gate D. I did want to talk about some season-long views on this team and some bets maybe that you guys made as well.
Your credential picture is hilarious, by the way.
It's an old photo.
Dude,
this photo – so not to go too –
Did they stretch your face?
Well, that's what it is. It's stretch. That's the biggest thing.
That's Botox out.
Yeah. So it's the photo has been stretched. I think Spec submitted these like 4 years ago, and they've not changed it. And then it's definitely.
I'm gonna
stretched.
Suit it.
You're much more handsome now.
So well, thank you, Dusty.
Yeah, that was like back in your like just out of Lawrence phase.
This
like,
photo is probably from 2019 or 2018.
That's pre-COVID out.
So that's pre-COVID. That's pre-COVID.
That's why he was smiling.
The mask.
That's what it is. No, I was saying someone texted in that they're in Kansas. They're making some bets. Then they're coming out to Kauffman Stadium. What season long view do you have bet wise for the Chiefs? Because I can run
for
through
Royals?
For the Royals.
Super Bowl.
For the Chiefs, yeah, just another.
I've already locked it in.
Lewis, Reese, Zamet actually.
Over 1,000 yards. Do you want another bottle of Louis?
Now you're buying a $4,000 bottle. Absolutely not. Not with my pay grade. No
so
way.
A couple of long season-long bets for the Royals. AL Central, we've talked about this one before. I do have a 30-1 bet on the Royals to win the Central. They're down to like 10-1, I think, in some books.
They were, what, plus 850?
I got them at 30-1.
I didn't get them in a good enough number to bet it. Yeah. I'd like it at your number.
Yeah, 30-1. I got that back in January. Also, the most recent one I bet actually was Pasquantino, comeback player of the year in the American League. 9-1 right now on FanDuel.
Okay.
And then two other ones we've discussed a ton. Reagan's strikeout leader, 80-1. He's down to 20 or 24-1 for that. Cy Young, 14-1. And then Bobby Wood Jr., stolen base leader, at 12-1. So those are my season-long Royals bets that I play.
Funny enough, I like him better, Cole Reagan's. So I've got to bet on him to win the Cy Young because I like it better than the strikeouts. Because Strider's a monster.
Yes.
He's a monster. He won that by 50 or 60 strikeouts last year.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about that number, it was hard. That's why it's a long shot, and you got it at an even better number. So I don't blame you for betting it at the number you have. But, like, the number it is currently, no. I bet him to win Cy Young earlier than the 8 or 9-1 he is now. I think I got him at 22-1 or whatever it was at the number, and I like that. I bet the Vinny Pasquantino over home runs earlier in the year as well because I still think
What's
he's got more juice. At the time, it was 17.5, I think, or 16.5.
He could hit 3 today with this win.
Seems low.
It does, but it was a low number at the time, and I don't think he'd fully come back from the injury yet that was the case. But I also have one on with you, Bobby Wood Jr. strikeouts as well.
Bobby Wood Jr.
Or stolen bases.
Stolen bases, okay.
Yeah. And then I have Vinny to hit a home run today, plus 650.
My thought on Bobby Wood Jr. stolen base leader, so Acuna's the problem there, right, just because.
Yeah, of course.
But Bobby got caught stealing 15 times last year. So let's say in terms of opportunity.
Regression to the norm takes him to 7 times caught.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden, you're potentially in business. Now, maybe it takes Acuna missing some games. I don't know. But, yeah, 12-1, I don't hate it. What about you, Dusty? What are you looking at season long?
I mean, the one that's really hilarious is for the Royals to win it all is 13 plus 13,000, which that's not.
So they're 130-1 to win it all right now?
Yeah, I got all the numbers here. And then I thought.
Well, it's funny. If you bet them to win the division, you know what? The win it all.
Well, if they get to the postseason, you just got to hedge.
You just get out of there. I love the 74.5 at minus 115. I think they're a 77. I mean, I saw the board the other day at work.
So we're on the show. So Cody's 76.
Yeah.
Drew's 77. I'm 78. So we're all.
Yeah, I'm right. I think that's a good number.
That's a range.
Like anywhere. I mean, and that's a mass improvement from what you had last year, and I think that keeps them entertaining into August. I believe that to be true. Minnesota, who you play today, is going to be a problem. Detroit's going to be an issue. Cleveland, I mean, is going to be an issue. Another one that I like is 83 or more wins is plus 285. Ooh. So if you want to take a little juice and squeeze a little harder, you can get that one for 83 is plus 285.
Man, at that point, if they're getting like 85, all of a sudden to me at that point, I'm thinking about just betting on the division. I have a division.
Yeah, and the division's plus 850. And then the other one I like is that you can find on DraftKings, I saw this last night, like a grouping. So if you can pick a number, so you say it's like 77, 76, you can get somewhere on there that's like 70 to 75 wins.
So you can do like band betting.
Yeah, okay. So band betting is what it's called. And there's one that's 65 to 70. So if you're like, I think they'll be good, but I don't want to like oversell it, anywhere between 65 and 70 is plus 450, and I love that bet. So if you think they
65 win 65 and 70?
Well, between 65
between
and
65 and 70
Not
wins.
75 and 80.
No, but between 65 and 70 is plus 485, which I don't understand. Because
they think they're going to be better than that. That's why win total's at 73.5.
If you get there, 74.5 is minus 115, which, I mean, if you want to have a fun season-long bet, I think that's the one. And then, obviously, Bobby Wood Jr., I think, was plus 2,000 to win MVP.
Okay.
I wish you could bet, like, finishing the top three. That'd be too easy, obviously, but I do think that. And then my bet today, I've got Royals plus 1.5. It's parlayed with Bobby Witt Jr., stolen base, one of any time, or more, and then Reagan's 6 plus strikeouts. It's plus 475.
I made a lot of money on Reagan strikeouts props last year.
Lyle's
for
losses.
A while, they had not caught up to his number on that for a long time, I felt like.
I mean,
that was a good win there for a while for me.
Today, I believe it's at 6.5.
Yeah, let's get off to a good start. We all, it sounds like, kind of in on the Reagan strikeout leader bet that's out there for the season.
Once Cole went down, you got to love your odds there. I'm sure it changed immediately once Cole was out.
Yeah, the only we'll give out, I guess, today. I mentioned for today, I like Melendez 2+ hits. It's like plus 450 and over 3.5 runs scored for the Royals today. Those are a couple bets that we're all keeping an eye on for the season and for today as the Royals take on Pablo Lopez and the Minnesota Twins. But let's get to the trash of the day.
Trash of the day.
All right, we didn't get to this yesterday, and then we'll get right back into some Royals baseball and the Chiefs, but this has to do with Mike Tyson, who we all know he's fighting one of the Pauls. Like he, I don't know which one. I can't remember. One of the Pauls.
Jake?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. That
I had to learn. The last time I said
the
this.
The one with the lisp.
Oh, really?
That's how I tell them apart.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
What?
Okay. Whatever. Hey, I can't identify
them.
Sure.
Or Logan's the WWE star.
Okay.
Jake's the boxer.
So they're fighting in Dallas this summer on Netflix, and yes, I am going to watch. But Mike Tyson is now selling edibles shaped like a chewed ear.
Oh.
You can get them in New York only currently. And I just want, is Evander Holyfield getting...
Why is this trash of the day?
Like a residual?
These are always what we do. These are the trash of the day type of stories.
You think he wants a cut?
I think you should get a bite.
Because it's his ear, yeah. Technically, I guess, on the gum.
Yeah, it looks like the Twins are here. I don't know, man. I don't think this is trash of the day. I think this is a great idea. Obviously Tyson.
Oh, get your
like,
money, but I think Evander Holyfield should be like, hey, come on, man. Can I not be part of this? Holyfield should have done this.
It's definitely not Tyson that came up with this. He's got a great marketing team because this is very like perfect niche for Mike Tyson. Obviously, if you followed him after his boxing career, he's gotten very much involved in the marijuana aspect of life. But and good for him. He took a lot of shots to the head, and it probably helps him out a little bit better throughout his life. But the ear gummy, fantastic.
Oh, it's a great idea.
But, yeah, Vander Holyfield maybe needs to get in on this or maybe kind of throw it. It all depends. Is it his ear?
Is it just an ear?
Yeah.
Or is it shaped like Evander Holyfield's ear? Because that's a different circumstance. Did you see that MMA guy who got a tattoo after that guy bit him in the middle of the fight the other day?
No.
So he had a massive bite mark on his bicep. Fight got called because they saw him bite the guy really hard. He got a tattoo around it being like, I'm a badass, essentially.
Why are people
right around
he got
the guy,
a tattoo of
and then
the,
he had the bite
wound.
Marks tattooed in.
Why are people biters?
I don't know, man. I think when you're desperate, I think that's what it is.
So
in a moment of desperation, you're like, oh, God, I got to do anything to win this. I am screwed.
Were you... And maybe you don't need to say it on the air with the wife listening.
Uh-oh.
Were you a big hickey guy?
No. Not my thing.
Goldie got a long neck, man. Were you?
No.
Not my thing.
Not a thing. Anytime you saw somebody.
We don't kick shame on the show.
In the school.
Who likes that?
Some people are into
it.
Some
people like it.
You know how athletes have those suction marks on their shoulders
and
back?
Yeah, that's for cupping. It's blood flow.
Some kid named Ronnie always came into your high school or middle school just sucked out on the neck. I'm just not into biters.
I love it. You just compared the hickey to the athletes that get cupping for blood circulation.
That's what it looks like.
Oh, I mean,
it looks like you got cupped on the neck.
I mean, that would be a huge hickey. The cups are, I mean, that's much bigger.
You never had kids come to your school? Wherever, and that you'd be like, oh, Daryl
got it
last night.
I got to be honest. I think those are the kids who just want to do the more fun stuff. They're like, I want to do something, but, you know, I'm
so
afraid to do the more fun stuff.
They decided to bite and
they got to do something instead.
I don't know about all that.
Text line says Dusty seems like a biter.
No,
is that true?
Biter.
Maybe an ass cheek.
Okay.
I'm not going to, I'm not a vampire. I'm a werewolf. I don't bite necks. You know, like, come
oh
on now.
Oh, my goodness.
Man.
I'm just asking if you guys have seen the MMA fighter since you're talking about Mike
Tyson. Why would you bite somebody mid-fight? Now, maybe if I'm
getting desperation.
If
I was getting my ass kicked and
I'm
it was like, I'll do whatever I got to do.
Not in a sanctioned fight, though. But,
yeah,
like, if you're fighting for your life, theoretically, yeah, that you do whatever the hell you got to do. But if it's happening in a sanctioned fight, what are you biting?
Yeah,
for?
If I'm fighting for my life, I'm pulling hair. I'm gouging ice.
Yeah.
I'm
fish
you
hooking
nuts.
Your nose. Whatever, dude. I'm trying to.
I'm Janikowski-ing you right into the groin, man, just to get out of there alive.
All right, Dusty, thanks for stopping by,
absolutely.
Man. All right, guys, coming up next, we'll talk a little Chiefs football and looking at the priorities for the upcoming draft. And we're expected to have the Royals general manager and executive vice president of baseball ops, J.J. Piccolo, join us here as we're live outside Kauffman Stadium on 610 Sports Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s?
It's better over here.
Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Chiefs Kingdom. This is Mitch Holtis, and welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour on Cody and Gold. Every day at 11:30 on your official broadcast partner, the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
We're back outside Kauffman Stadium, right outside Gate D to be exact, till 2 o'clock. Then Vern's On Deck show takes over, leading you up to first pitch today, 3:10 right here on 610 Sports Radio. Here in about 10 to 15 minutes, we're expected to be joined by the general manager and executive vice president of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, to get his thoughts on the start of this 2024 season, a very busy offseason that they had. As we mentioned, so many new faces on the opening day roster compared to a year ago. Just seven players from last year's opening day roster on this year's roster, which, yeah, is pretty wild to think about. So we'll get to that in just a little bit, and be sure to stop by, say hello. Some of you have already done that, picked up. We had a very small supply. I think we have a few left the Cody and Gold
t-shirts. Yeah, I hope you're smaller, but they're in there.
Cody and Gold t-shirts as well. Before we talk to JJ, it is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We're gonna cheat a little bit and probably do it for about 10 or 15 minutes. But looking at the first-round options, yesterday we discussed, all right, you trade up. Is he going to be aggressive, Brett Veach? And when he finds somebody that they think is almost can't miss, like Trent McDuffie, that's the one time they've really traded up in the first round. But positionally, is there much debate anymore of the three positions we think they're going to go after in the first round? I mean, at this point, clearly offensive tackle, I think, is in play based off of, as of right now, Wanya Morris would be the starting left tackle, and that's it. Wide receiver, absolutely still in play because Hollywood Brown's on a one-year deal. And so even if he has a great year, there's not a guarantee he's back. So you still need another complementary long-term option. So I think offensive tackle and wide receiver, the two absolutely are in play. And I would still argue maybe are the two favorite positions if we were to put odds. There will be very soon, by the way, odds
on what
position they'll draft.
No, I was just trying to think about, like, are we really down to those three? Because I know that
and the third being what?
Yeah, well, being defensive line. Okay. Offensive tackle, wide receiver, and defensive line for me. I know sometimes the non-sexy positions are like linebacker and safety. People do take those in the first round, okay? They do take corner, they do take safety, they do take linebacker in the first every year, all the time. Even linebackers who aren't sack guys get taken all the time. But I really think it's just down to those three once again. I think that the way that they've constructed their roster has put them in a position, Gold, where those are their only three real positions of need. Again, like offensive tackle. Look, I don't think they're taking a running back. That's got a 0% chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can cross off running back, kicker, punter, and quarterback.
Yeah. Look, kicker and punter every year. Quarterback every year until Patrick Mahomes retires.
And running
God
back.
For God's sakes, running backs after what happened with Clyde, I don't think that one needs to get mentioned in the mix there for a while either. And so, but I do think it's down to those three. I don't think you want to eliminate defensive line. I know it's easy to look at the roster, and you're not wrong. The roster is weakest at wide receiver and weakest at tackle. But defensive line is one of those positions where it might tell us a little bit about FAU if they take a first-round defensive line, but a lot more on the fact that we need to consider the one part of the Chris Jones thing on this that we haven't for the drafting perspective. Some of the other guys in the defensive line have got to be cheap. If you want any hope of extending George Karlaftis in a couple of years too, somebody on the defensive line has to be cheap. Cheap is in the draft, even in the first round of the draft, in 5 years of control, hypothetically, if you spend a first-round pick on it. You don't have any resources tied up in wide receiver. You're paying no one. Hollywood Brown's barely getting any money. You don't have any resources tied up. Like, you have some tied up in the offensive line. That's a whole other part, right? You got to be cheap there, too, because maybe you want to pay Creed. Maybe you want to pay Trey. You are paying Tooney. You are paying Taylor. So then, okay, again, someone on the offensive line's got to be cheap. But right now they already have a couple of cheap guys. On the defensive line, the only cheap possible starter is FAU. So their belief in him is what makes that door open on the first round, one of those don't-rule-it-out scenarios for me.
And I think it also probably matters how they feel the injury recovery is going to be for Charles Omenihue. This will be the final year under contract for Omenihue, but if are they believers that he comes back and contributes this season? Is it October? Is it November? And so Chris Jones, Felix, Karlaftis, Omenihue come November. They brought back Derek Nnadi. They brought back Turk Warden. Do they consider bringing back Mike Dana, who is still out there? I mean, I think that could swing how they approach. You know where I'm at just on the offensive tackle position in general, and you're right. I think you said it yesterday. The last 2 years I've wanted them to spend their first-round pick on an offensive tackle. I just think they really should be looking in that direction. We can mention they have cheaper pieces on the O-line. Sure, but Creed Humphrey's not going to be cheap here very soon if they give him an extension. If Trey Smith is on this team long-term, his extension for a guard won't be cheap. I don't think he's going to get the extension, but all of a sudden you'd have your right tackle making pretty good money. Your right guard in that hypothetical would. Your center would. Your left guard's deal isn't bad for the play you're getting, but still it's not cheap. So I do think they could use a longer-term option at left tackle that's on a rookie deal if they think there's that guy at 32, or as we discussed yesterday, if you're going to trade up, I think the only position they're trading up for from 32 is not wide receiver. I think it's tackle. I don't think they need to trade up from 32 to go get a wide receiver. That, to me, would be probably more pressing if Hollywood Brown wasn't already in a Chiefs uniform, even if it's for 1 year. Because you would say, hey, we got to make sure we get someone that can help us right now. And you and I have gone back and forth on Felix, and I agree with you on this. I don't think 2 years in a row your first-round pick can be someone that – you wait a year to see if he contributes.
Like, if they're taking a defensive lineman, you're saying it's more like Karlaftis. Hey, let's get this guy involved kind of.
Which is why
there's more space to be involved immediately because Omenihue's hurt again.
Yeah,
and they don't have Dan and some of these other guys. There's less competition there.
Yeah, and I think they can take a wide receiver just at 32, and that guy can contribute as your number three, number four wide receiver.
Agreed.
I think they're clear if they can tackle at 32 or they trade up, that guy's starting if they're taking a tackle, offensive tackle, in the first round. I don't believe you're going to spend that kind of priority of a pick. You know, the difference last year with Felix at 32 was at that point you had Chris Jones and you had Karlaftis and you had Omenihue, and so maybe you felt like, and you had Mike Dana, so you didn't maybe need the immediate impact. This year, there's some the two areas I would say they could use the immediate impact if we're prioritizing. You always want someone to help you right away, but if truly like, hey, you kind of need it, as of right this second, offensive tackle and wide receiver is probably the order I would go of, like, hey, you need someone that can come in on kind of day one. Then that'd be a star day one, but come in and give you some significant snaps.
That's the thing about wide receivers, that the third or fourth wide receiver, if you take it in the first, does contribute. It's just not – like, FAU didn't contribute. Like, if he were a rotational defensive lineman, like if he played the amount Turk Wharton did – he didn't even do that. He was a non-contributing member of the
multiple
team.
Multiple pieces ahead of him.
After
that
about
better.
Week, what, two or three?
Yeah, multiple pieces. I mean, it was on a championship team.
Yeah, and it was deep at that position.
They had players that could help them win now, and he was further along, and he's a developmental project.
Can't say they regret it, seeing how they went on and won the Super Bowl and had the best defense in the NFL.
And this year's so important for Felix. Training camp's he's going to be one of the biggest storylines at camp, and does a year of development equate to a much better sophomore season where he contributes. And that'll be a fair discussion to be had. I just think it's not as simple as, hey, they drafted a guy at 32. He didn't contribute, so he must stink. And I know you're not saying that, but
no,
it's not as simple as that.
But I'm worried he might stink. Does that make
and
sense?
I'm not telling you he's going to be And I'm not telling you he's going to be a star. But when we go through all the names that on a championship team that were ahead of him, Karlaftis and Jones and Dana and Warden and Omenihue, it makes more sense why a guy that they acknowledged was kind of a developmental pick didn't play as much as everybody would have liked to see. So now let's see. Let's find out how good the development is, and let's see if he's you know, also a year in an NFL, not that college don't have great weightlifting programs, but let's find, in an NFL program for a year, let's see, you know, I don't know if he's a guy we find out he gained 10 pounds in the offseason. I have no idea, but let's see a year in the Chiefs program what that does for him.
I will say he had a lot of competition, so I will use that as an evidence to be like, okay, I'm not going to write the guy's entire story yet. There's no reason to do that, but especially just considering his age. God, man, this is another one of those, like, last year I felt this way because they were the defending Super Bowl champ. You know I feel even stronger on this. I don't want a first-round pick that's not –
I'm with you where I don't think 2 years in a row
contributor.
I don't think 2 years in a row your first round pick can be someone that just doesn't really play.
Like, in some years you're like, hey, you can do that. You can flex it. You can make it work. Every year doesn't have to be the instant. You're looking for the ceiling guy. You chose the ceiling guy. You couldn't trade down to the area you wanted to be in. Okay, cool. We get it. And because they got, you know, and honestly, it's way more forgivable if he just becomes, let's say he becomes a 4.5 sack guy this year. He's a contributor.
Oh,
right?
I'd sign up for that right now.
Yeah, I would.
I think
too.
I don't know who wouldn't.
I'd still think it'd be kind of like, I don't know if you're off to a great start for a first round pick, but that's fine. I'd sign up for that. So 4.5 sacks. All right, great. We feel okay about it. The reason why it's an easier pill to swallow is depending on what you do with the other draft. You had a first and a second round pick. If you had flipped the picks, think about how different you'd feel. If Rashee Rice was the guy taken 31 overall, and instead FAU was taken with Rashee Rice's pick, we'd borderline be feeling gangbusters. You'd be like, all right, well, the second round pick was a project like Tano Passanio, and we're going to hope that eventually he develops into something that matters. But the first round pick, damn. He was the leading wide receiver for this team last year and has a chance to be even better. But they weren't in that order, and it makes you like I can reevaluate now. In the first two-round picks, they got a first-round talent with one, and they got a developmental guy with the second. I'm good. We're good. But I need to start seeing some stuff out of FAU this year, which is why I still wouldn't rule out defensive line, because I'm viewing them almost in reverse now, right? It's not like that, a first-round defensive lineman. They took a project in the second round. If you took a project in the second round, all right, well, then you can take one at 32.
We don't know the name if that player exists, but if there's someone that they, like the Trent McDuffie example, that they just fall in love with and they think is going to be a future star, and even if they drafted that position last year and in the first round, it doesn't mean they're not going to do it. If they actually have that player that they think is kind of can't miss, that falls to them or is available to in realistic trade terms, not trading up 10 spots, but trading up 3 spots, let's say. I also think, for just going back to the tackle, I mean, it will say a ton about how they feel about Wanya Morris if they don't draft one in the first round.
Yeah, because they love him. I mean, we have to just trust him on that.
I know there's still a chance, and I think they will bring in some sort of veteran tackle. Like, you know what I mean? Whether it's before the draft or after, it could be Donovan Smith again. I don't know. I think there's a chance that they'll bring in some veteran presence. But if they spend their first-round pick on a tackle, then that tells us they don't – let's be honest. They don't love Wanya as much as they claim to have loved. And he can be a great flex backup Nick Allegretti role kind of guy who's no longer with the team. He's now starting with the Commanders. So that could be the path. Or if they don't draft a tackle until the second or third round, then we're going to have a real competition between Wanya Morris and whoever that guy
whichever
is.
Whichever rando veteran.
Plus
or
the veteran.
Third round,
yeah.
You know, or whatever third round pick they take at tackle.
Yeah. Someone says on the text line, do you think they'll even use pick 32? That's always, I mean, that's always in play. You know, it is a trade down scenario a possibility. I think that is absolutely something that we could see happen. You know, last year we saw the Chiefs decide to make that pick, and there was a lot of speculation whether or not that was just because at that point the draft happened to be in Kansas City or whatever. But we'll get back to that a little bit later as we're continuing to broadcast outside Kauffman Stadium right by Gate D, and we've got plenty of fans lined up. Noon, the gates will actually open up, get that Bobby Wood Jr. bobblehead, and the excitement getting closer and closer to first pitch here in 2024. And we're always excited. Anytime in person, we can have the general manager and the executive vice president of baseball ops for the Royals. Yeah, watch your head there. That would not have been good for any of us there. We got J.J. Bacolo joining us here outside Kauffman Stadium. Well, happy opening day. It's good to have you on the show again.
Oh, there we go. Hold on. Now we got you.
All right. Well, happy opening day to you as well, and excited for it.
Absolutely.
We won't ask you about bunting this time, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about that because coming in today, somebody said something on the radio about bunting, and I'm like, yeah, I got asked that question last year.
Yeah, that was.
I still stand by that. That's what I think of when I think of opening day. I think of bunting in the pomp and circumstance.
Well, it's on every opening day logo, so why not?
Yeah, exactly.
For you, you think about this offseason, a busy offseason as always, but we were discussing, I think it's just 7 players were on the opening day roster last year that are here today. And so clearly a turnover on the roster. If I were to ask you just about this team and your number one priority in the offseason to now where we're at, how would you describe the way you attacked it?
Well, I think it started with we recognized that we had some young talent on our club that was going to be here for a long time. Not necessarily talking about Bobby's extension, but we had 5-6 years with some guys. You know, whether it was Bobby, Michael, talking about Kyle Isbell, Michael Massey, Cole Reagans, Brady Singer, MJ Melendez. I mean, the list goes on and on. And because we felt good about that group and what they could potentially do, what can we do to help them blossom as major league players? So how does that happen? Well, typically it happens because you put protection around them. So and then we had obvious holes. I mean, our rotation wasn't very good last year. Our bullpen wasn't good enough last year, so they were glaring holes to us. The pitching needed to be addressed. And then really the position player part of our roster is more like a puzzle. You know, what do we need? Do we need a middle-of-the-order bat? Do we need right-handed? Do we need left-handed? And I think with the last signing of Adam Frazier, we felt like we have some balance now. You know, we have options for Q, and last year was a tough year. I mean, Q's first year as a manager, and, you know, quite honestly, the team just wasn't good enough. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But now we're excited about who we have, and, you know, the offseason was dictated because of a number of things that I just mentioned and others. But the way we stand today, we're in a better spot than where we were last year.
Is it hard to be sure that a pitching staff will work together when you have this amount of turnover? Like, when you look at, like, what your rotation is and what your bullpen is, you're like, that is dramatically different. And a bunch of guys that didn't all pitch together necessarily. How confident can you be that you're like, well, this is all, not from scratch, but a lot of new pieces. Can it all work together?
I think the guys that we acquired, if they're able to perform to their accustomed level, which for Lugo was just consistency, and, you know, give us about, I think this year we can realistically see a jump in his innings total. You know, last year, first year being in the starting role, we can see a jump in Brady's innings. We, you know, Waka, we kind of know, you know, we got about 130 innings or so, because that's what his track record says. But if they're able to do what they did in the past, then they're doing exactly what we signed them for. And then the bullpen, it's really just a matter of throwing strikes and having flexibility, versatility for Q to go to matchups. That's really what it is. It's more of a matchup bullpen than a power bullpen. So when we were in 2014 and 15, we had that dominant 7th-8th inning. I don't think we're that type of bullpen. We're more of a matchup bullpen that will give him options to get to the 9th inning.
When you guys lay out the rotation, right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, how much do you think about the fact, like, I know opening day starter, you're sending a message to a guy because you're saying, hey, you're our opening day starter, we believe in you. But, like, when we look at it, we're like, all right, Brady Singer, the 3. Does that mean that, like, that's just a good matchup for Brady, or does that mean you guys still view him as a middle rotation guy or has that potential this year?
Well, we still view him as a middle rotation guy, but we did take into account the Twins lineup versus the Orioles lineup. It's not Baltimore's opening day on Monday, but our first road game, you know, a guy that's been there, done it, you know, that factored in a little bit. It wasn't the only thing we factored in, but it just felt right. We worked through it. Once we decided Cole was definitely our opening day starter, we knew we wanted – it was really kind of coming in. It was probably either Cole or Lugo, one of the two.
Sure.
Once we figured that out, we knew that Lugo was going to fall in the two hole. And then after that, it was a bunch of different things to come to that conclusion, 3, 4, 5. But we feel good about it. We feel like it matches up pretty well with our opponents.
We're talking to J.J. Piccolo, Royals General Manager, Executive Vice President of Baseball Ops here on 610 Sports Radio ahead of opening day. The rest of this division, I think we've talked to you about the division before, and I know internally you guys, like every team, has projections on where you think you guys are going to end up and what the data is telling you. We were mentioning, I think there's a chance this might be the most competitive division in baseball this year. How do you view where you guys are at and where this division, and if the gap is not that large, it seems?
I think you explained it very well. You know, in our projections, it's a tight grouping. You know, there's not one team that's projected to win 95, and there's not a team that's really projected to win 55. You know,
so
everybody's somewhere between 75 and 85, and that's pretty tight. And really, what swings the needle are things for our club anyway. Guys taking that next step forward, guys being consistent, health factors in. But we do think it's going to be a tight race. We think there's going to be 3-4 teams that are, you know, when we get to August and September, we're going to be fighting it out. The only thing I'll say about our division, at least going into it, you know, it's hard to at least forecast the wild card's going to come out of our division. You know, that could change. I mean, things change all the time. That could change, but at least as it sets today, we think the division winner is going to be the lone representative from the Central to play in the playoffs. But that's our projections. Other teams may see it differently.
When you guys go through the projections, we talked about last year's projections and that you guys fell short of even what you thought the internal projections were like on your team due to some areas where you guys came up short in performance. How much better are this year's projections in your mind versus last year's? From just like a pure win total. Give me a range. It doesn't have to be we see this number of games.
We're our own projections have us winning more games. It's not a 15-game margin. You know, it's
from where you were last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's 5 or 6 games better with our projections. But again, they're projections. We just actually had this discussion with our players because we're rolling out some new stuff internally. And the last thing we want to do is guys get caught up in projections. that's the beauty of having veteran players. They kind of
just poo-pooed
it. They're like, I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is what I do tonight, and that's the attitude they need to have. So they are what they are. It's a way for us to evaluate going into the season what our expectations should be, with the caveat that there's margin for error there. You know, it could go positively, it could go negatively. You know, so we're aware of it. We just don't live by it.
Are Bobby's projections 60 home runs, 60 stolen bases, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Is that the 90? Is that the 99th percentile version of Bobby?
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting with Bobby this year, and maybe not even this year. It's more so in the coming years. You know, I've been asked this question a lot. You know, is Bobby going to steal 75 bases? I think Bobby's capable of stealing 75 bases, but I don't think we need him to steal 75 bases. It's exciting. We need him to be on the field.
Sure.
So what we hope to see out of Bobby this year is an improvement in his success rates, because he needs to be able to steal a base when we need him to steal a base, especially 4 or 5 years from now.
Versus what, the 15 he was caught last year?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and he's actually talked about it quite a bit. You know, he's pretty open about it. I want to improve that. So, you know, not to get too long-winded, but you're hoping that, you know, maybe his attempts go down, but his success rate goes up over time. So when it's the ninth inning and he's got to steal a bag, we need you to steal the bag. And he's got to be more adept at doing that. And knowing Bobby and his instinctive learning and the way he goes about, he'll figure that out.
You mentioned Adam Frazier a couple minutes ago. We know he's in the lineup today. And I don't know if it was official, but Michael Massey, where are things with him? I know he's dealing with some back problems.
Yeah, Michael's had some back issues throughout his career. They kind of come and go. He's learned how to manage them very well, but unfortunately it flared up on him last week. And the timing was poor. He was going to miss the bats for 7 to 10 days. And then he was going to have to get another 25 at-bats or so, not necessarily over 5-6 games, but we can do it in the minor leagues in the spring, because they're still in spring training.
Yeah.
He can get 4 or 5 at-bats a day when he's ready. I think our goal for Michael is for him to be as close to 100% when we roll him out here, as opposed to chasing it all year, especially a back. Backs can linger, and we want it to just settle.
There's a lot of big expectations for tonight's or today's opening day starter, Cole Ragans. I mean, I'm sure you saw, like, John Morosi predicted him to win the American League Cy Young. I know you guys loved the trade at the time. This offseason, getting a full year with Cole, how confident are you that what we saw at the end of last year, which was one of the best pitchers in baseball, is what we're going to see again this season?
Well, if he pitches the way he did last year, he's certainly going to be in the Cy Young Award discussion. But that's, you're talking about, you need another 20 starts, or it's not quite 20. He needs to double the amount of starts that he made last year to really be in that discussion. It's great to think that way. We're optimistic that he's going to be some version of what he was last year. He may get better, and there may be a little bit of regression, but, you know, he pitched so well that even if there's a little bit of regression, he's still going to be really good. Yeah.
Like, I just wonder, with a guy like that, it's so hard to be like, boy, because I know you think you're making a good trade, but then when he pitches like that, you're like, wait, how good of a trade did we make in this scenario? Do we need to alter our expectations for what we're going to do with Cole?
Well, I think when we made the trade, we knew from a talent standpoint what we expected. But what we found out more about him is the adversity he's gone through. It's really developed him as a baseball player. The way he prepares, the way he goes about his workload in between starts, it really stands out. It's like a guy that's been in the league for 15 years, and he really doesn't have that much time in the major league. So he certainly has exceeded and is better than what we thought. But I think a lot of it has to do with the talent plus the preparation he does, and it just comes out.
One other player I want to ask you about before we let you go, as we're talking to J.J. Piccolo, the Royals general manager. MJ Melendez, thinking of second halves of the season, made the adjustment he mentioned in spring a little bit last year after the All-Star break, and which led to better results, obviously, in the second half. Where are you guys at with him, and what you think he can still be for this organization?
MJ's a really talented player. You know, he has shown the ability to walk, and he's got power. I know last year those walk totals and strikeout numbers flipped, but we have reason to believe, looking at his track record in the minor leagues, you know, that wasn't an aberration.
Sure.
So we believe in the player. I think defensively he can get a lot better. And then really from an offensive standpoint, which he is more of an offensive player, just consistency. Give us good at-bats every night. You know, you compete the way we've seen you compete. And who knows? I really believe MJ could be a 30-35 home run player. We've seen him do it. There's not many guys that come to Kauffman Stadium, left-handed hitters, that can drive the ball out the left. left center the way he does. And when he's swinging the bat well, that's what he's doing. The best feeling that I get personally is when MJ hits a single over to shortstop's head, especially if it's his first at bat of the night. I'm like, all right, he's locked in. That's perfect. And Vinny's very similar. When Vinny's hitting the ball the other way, he's going to have a good night. So we just need to see that more out of MJ. We believe in him coming into spring training. We were really optimistic that he was going to be our opening day left fielder, and he had a good spring training.
Last thing from just your end, I'm curious, like, now that you've been in the job a couple of years, how do you evaluate your own, like, expectations for yourself and proving that you're the right guy to, like, keep getting more wins for this team going forward? I know in each individual year, you personally have to probably look at your own expectations.
Yeah, I try not to think about my future, because this is more about putting a good team on the field for our fans. That's what it's about. And I've tried to express this really as best I can to our staff. Our job, we were baseball fans as kids, and we had a favorite team, and whether even other sports.
Sure.
And as a fan, that's your expectation, is your favorite team plays well. And I try to look at it through those eyes, and it really kind of provides clarity for you. You know, so when you do go to evaluate, whether it's moves we've made as a front office, whether it's a player on the field, when you think about it in those terms, I think you'll make the better decision more often. So I look at this job as a privilege. If you would have told me this is my 25th year in baseball, that I'd be a general manager, I never thought about that. I just wanted to be a good scout. That's what I was hired to do. I've been fortunate along the way. And really, as far as this year is concerned, there's a calmness that I have. I feel like our offseason was productive. We did what we needed to do. And as I told my parents last night at dinner, I see it's out of my hands right now. Like, tomorrow is about the players. It's all about how they approach the game, and pretty much every day is like that. And along the way, we got to make moves. We'll make moves. But it's really keeping our fan base in mind that's most important to me.
Do they still try to pay for dinner?
They do pay for dinner.
Parents can't help it, you know?
They won't let me pay for dinner. It's unbelievable.
You're like, I can do it. It's fine. I got you.
It's unreal. It's unreal. But they will not let me pay for dinner.
Do you have a scouting report on today's opening day first pitch, I should say, from one Andy Reid?
Well, he was in that punt pass and kick contest, so he's been on the big stage. And moments like that, I think he'll do just fine.
JJ, appreciate the time as always.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That's JJ Piccolo, Royals General Manager, Executive Vice President. We'll continue broadcasting outside Gate D next right here on 610 Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.